there's a lot of rhetoric around about, you know, reconciliation and social justice. But that's all it is empty rhetoric.
Rick Griffiths, from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission. I'm Christine Baker, reporting for Free Speech Radio News in Sydney.
This is Free Speech Radio News, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
This is Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, unless your stereo was made in America.
Face flag, your country recognizes the principle of which says sit down. Municipal Court number 38 is now in session. Honorable Gladys Stacks presiding.
Good morning. Bailiff, you may call the first case of the day.
State versus Horwinkle. State versus Horwinkle. Leslie Horwinkle, please step to the docket. Are you Leslie Horwinkle?
Well, if I wasn't Leslie Horwinkle, I wouldn't be here now, would I?
Just sit down over there, Horwinkle.
Oh, kiss my ass.
Judge, this is case 148, People versus Horwinkle. That's one I talked about yesterday.
What the hell are you staring at, you goddamn fascist pig?
Be quiet, Horwinkle.
Haven't you ever seen a criminal before?
Mr. Horwinkle.
All right, read the
kiss
charge.
My ass, you bastard. Help me.
Leslie Horwinkle, you are charged on the night of September 14th at approximately 8 p.m., you did willfully, with malice aforethought, sexually assault a 16-year-old girl. How do you plead?
I plead insanity.
Insanity?
That's right, insanity. I'm just crazy about that stuff.
Mr. Horwinkle, this has not been the first time you have appeared before this court on such a charge, and we must make sure that you do not appear here again. Bailiff, whack his pee-pee.
Get your hands off me now. Go on, you stupid bad.
Bailiff, call the next case, please.
State versus Stoner. State versus Stoner. Are you counsel for Stoner?
Yes, I am. thank you. Listen, just sit over there, and I'll do the talking, okay? Just be quiet.
Man, relax, man. You know, it's cool, man.
All right.
We got this sucker in bag.
Okay, no, listen, I'll do the talking. When I call on you to come up, don't forget what you have to say, okay?
Yeah, man. Okay. Hey, man, it's cool.
Just sit down, man. I'll do the talking.
Yeah, man, go do your trip, man.
Okay, let's just quiet. Well.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, your honor. Now, it might seem suspicious that my client had in his possession at the time of his arrest 24 pounds of marijuana, 5,000 LSD capsules, and a gallon of Ripple wine. To the layman on the street, this may seem suspicious. However, there is an excuse, Your Honor. There is an explanation. It seems that my client had merely found these drugs, and he was on his way to the police department to turn them in at the time of his arrest. Now, we're not saying that my client is an angel. We admit openly that on two occasions he has smoked marijuana, and on one occasion taken LSD, of course, under the clinical supervision of a doctor. Now, what we want you to do tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is to look inside your hearts, to examine your own consciences, and remember this: judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Now, as a true sign of repentance, I'd like to have my client step forward and say just a very few words in his own behalf at this time.
All right, man. I almost broke my neck, man. Oh, that's heavy, man. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, man. Hey, Your Honor, man.
No, the judge is up there.
Hey, Your Honor, man. Now, dig, man. Like, I know a lot of cats, man. Call you a pig, you know what I mean? Not really, man. Like, you know, but I ain't like that, man. You dig? Because I dig pigs, man.
Quiet.
Not really, man. You see, my old lady's a pig, you understand? Hey, yeah, listen, man. Like my man here says now, you dig? I've only tried marijuana, man, I guess. 22 times, man. Twice, man. And yeah, man. And I only did acid, man. 10 times, man. Yeah. No, once, man. Yeah, really, man. Hey, now, listen, man. Now, dig. I know, man, where that drug trip leads, man. Like, I know it's really a drag, man, you know, because I, you know, like, I really can dig that you can get hung up, man, you know. And you get hung up, man, you know, and you just go through some, man, you know what I mean, man? Far out, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a heavy, far out thing, man. And you really get involved, man. You know what I mean? Like, this whale, man, once you get there,
what
man,
I think my client is
gone,
trying to say at this
mean?
Time, Your Honor, is that
you know, like,
he has transcended
really
the drug
gone,
experience.
Man,
yes, that's it. He has gone beyond that. He needs no
crutches. Hold on,
to
man. Hold on, man.
I'll
I'm doing the rap.
He needs no crutches to face society every morning as a useful producing citizen.
Hold on, man. I'm talking to the cat,
order.
Man.
Order in the car.
I'm talking to the
order.
Cat, man. You just shut up, man. You understand? Now just shut up, man. Or you're going to thaw it for me. Dig, man. Like, man, like, you know, I don't need no marijuana, man. You know what I mean, man? I don't need no acid, man. You know what I mean, you know? Because I'm hooked on downers, man.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall, and that was our weekly tribute to Tommy Chong, which needed no introduction and got none. It was called Trippin' in Court, which you probably could have figured out on your own without me telling you that. And it comes from the self-titled Cheech and Chong album from 1978. Yeah, a little later in their career. And of course we're doing this, we're continuing to do this until Tommy Chong is released from prison, playing a new Cheech and Chong track every week. Well, not a new one, but probably new to a lot of people that have never listened to every single one of their albums. And I have to admit, I'm one of those people. I've never listened to more than, say, a handful of their material before. And what has happened to Tommy Chong being sent to prison for selling bongs on the internet at the age of 65? It's educated me a lot as to the material that they put out, and I can honestly say I probably wouldn't be listening to it now were it not for the unjust action that was taken against him. And hopefully these tracks are finding their way to hundreds, dare I say thousands, of other people who will then spread them around too. In that file-sharing way that has developed of late. And speaking of file sharing and legal action, unjust behavior, things like that. You know, today is something that is labeled as a day that I don't think has been labeled like this before. Today is Gray Tuesday. That's right. Gray Tuesday is a special event. Because of something that's happening in the music world, which I think is pretty interesting and something that we should all be paying attention to. Basically, there is this album that is out called The Gray Album. Now, what it is, it's kind of like a mix, a remix, if you will, a super remix of portions of the Beatles' White Album and portions of Jay-Z's The Black Album. And it's made by this guy named DJ Danger Mouse. Mixed them together, did some creative, imaginative things, and he called it the Grey Album. Spelled with an E, not an A. Now, Jay-Z's record label, which is known as Rockefeller, cute, huh? They released an a cappella version of his Black Album specifically to encourage remixes. Now, the Beatles weren't as considerate. They just released the White Album. I understand if you have a mono version of the White Album, it sounds very different, but there's like three people left that have that. And it's gotten all kinds of praise from various media outlets, music fans, entities like that. Rolling Stone called it an ingenious hip-hop record that sounds oddly ahead of its time. The Boston Globe said it's the most creatively captivating album of the year. And EMI has said, cease and desist. Yes, that's their review of it. They've sent cease and desist letters demanding that stores destroy their copies of the album and websites remove them from their site. EMI, those are the guys that claim copyright control of the Beatles' 1968 White Album. So today is a day of protest where websites all around the world are... Hang on a second. Yeah. Hey, what's up?
You're not on the air, aren't
you? Yeah, I'm on the air right now, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you call?
Well, because you're interrupting my radio show, so I have to... telephone calls take priority over the radio any day. Everybody knows that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm playing. No, I'm not playing. I should get back to the radio show, though.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
That sounds fine.
Okay, cool.
All right. All right, take care. Sorry about that. But phone calls are more important, right? There's nothing that a phone call can't interrupt. Nothing. I'm learning that slowly. And that's how I intend to live my life. No matter what, when that phone rings, I drop everything. All right, I drop my train of thought. Now I have to get on the next one. Yes, okay, so EMI, they claim copyright control of the Beatles' 1968 White Album. Now, Danger Mouse's album is one of the most... This is according to the website that is leading this protest. I'm going to tell you more about the protest in a second. It's one of the most respectful and undeniably positive examples of sampling. It honors both the Beatles and Jay-Z. Yet the lawyers and bureaucrats at EMI have shown zero flexibility and not a glimmer of interest in the artistic significance of this work. And without a clearly defined right to sample, that is, compulsory licensing, the five major record labels will continue to use copyright in a reactionary and narrowly self-interested manner that limits and erodes creativity. Their actions are also self-defeating. Good new music is being created that people want to buy, but the major labels are so obsessed with hoarding their copyrights that they are literally turning customers away. So today, basically, there are all kinds of websites that are offering this album online where you can download it. And the website is www.graytuesday.org. Again, Gray spelled with an E, not an A. The Gray Tuesday protest is being organized by a music activism project known as Downhill Battle. They have no affiliation with Danger Mouse. Now, it's interesting. I'm not entirely certain if it's impossible for them to get copyright clearance to use these samples or if they just were unwilling to pay a copyright fee. I'm not really sure what the deal is. That isn't explained, at least on the page that I have here. But one thing that is rather annoying, I can sort of understand. I really can sort of understand if music is being sold out there that uses bits of other music, and it's not either being acknowledged or the original copyright holders aren't being compensated for it in some way. I can understand that. I can understand them being upset at that. However, if they are refusing to allow anybody to touch anything of theirs, they can't really be surprised. They might have the law on their side, but they can't really be surprised if they see things like this happen. Now, also, I believe they have a case as far as preventing people from making money off of this project, from buying and selling and things like that. But they certainly don't have a case as far as allowing people to make their own mixes of whatever they want to make. We've done that all the time here at the radio station, and that's why the mere implication that these are forbidden pieces of music is enough to mortally offend anybody, I think, involved in creativity or broadcasting or things like that. Yes, this is the sound of that music. It's not illegal. Okay, well, now you know a little bit of it sounds like. If this was a music show, I'd be playing the whole thing. Actually, I can't play the whole thing unless it's after 10 o'clock because some of it uses some salty language. But again, if you're interested in hearing what this sounds like, go to www.graytuesday.org, gray with an E, not an A, and you'll see a list of sites there that are offering it for download. And again, you know, you make a mix of something. You turn people's speeches inside out, or you take somebody's music and you play it backwards, you do whatever you want to do. You have every right to do that. Now, do you have the right to sell it and make a big profit off of it? That's a bit more hazy. But you have every right to listen to it. So don't be afraid. All right, more music legality news. Get this. Rapper Eminem's music publisher is suing Apple Computer, claiming the company used one of the hip-hop superstar's songs in a television advertisement without permission. You see, it's not the common people that are doing this alone. The major corporations are in on it, too. They use things without permission all the time. 8 Mile's, and believe me, they made money off of it. They sure did. 8 Mile Style, which is the name of his company, they filed a copyright infringement suit late last week against Apple, Viacom Inc., its MTV subsidiary, and the advertising agency that started this whole thing. At issue is an ad for Apple's iTunes pay-per-download music software in which a 10-year-old sings Eminem's Lose Yourself. Yeah. A 10-year-old singing your song. You're entitled to residuals from that. Can't just go out and sing a song. Can't even sing Happy Birthday without paying somebody. Need a license for that. I think every restaurant that does that has to pay a licensing fee. It's crazy. Eminem has never nationally endorsed any commercial products, according to his lawsuit, and even if he were interested in endorsing a product, any endorsement deal would require a significant amount of money, possibly in excess of, $10 million. And that lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Detroit. And that's some of the craziness that's going on in the music world. Let's go to the real world, all right? The real world is a lot more crazy, a lot more interesting. And we'll be taking phone calls later on if people choose to call us. 631-632-WUSB. Yes, WUSB. I might as well get into this now. There's a new standard in the computer world that's being introduced. You've heard of USB, right? Does anybody know what USB stands for? You know, I used to be able to. In the old days when I did radio here, I was able to ask a question. And if somebody called up with the answer, I would know that they actually knew something. But now there's nothing I can ask that somebody can't go into Google and within 10 seconds find an answer of some sort that would be correct. So trivia is pretty much destroyed unless you strip somebody naked and take away all possibility of them connecting to the net and interrogate them. All right, but for those of you who are racking your brains right now trying to think what USB actually stands for besides University of Stony Brook, which is what our call letters stand for, it stands for Universal Serial Bus. It also stands for Upper Sideband, which is a radio term. And years ago, it was kind of cool that Upper Sideband had the same letters as USB. Because, you know, shortwave radio and all that predates us. But we were pretty much the only USB in town. Even the university wasn't known as USB back then. They were the State University of New York at Stony Brook, and they would be very strict about saying it the right way. But now people refer to USB, it could be in the university as well. University of Stony Brook, you can say that. It's permitted. But then universal serial bus technology was introduced, and it's a popular connection type for PCs, and it's been migrating into consumer electronic and mobile devices. But now this high-speed and effective connection interface, yes, I'm reading a press release, is unwiring to provide the functionality of wired USB without the burden of cables. And guess what they're going to be calling this? Wireless USB. Wireless USB. Now, it's going to impact device performance and mobility, according to this release here. And it's going to be known as WUSB. So that's it. That's it. I mean, you will not be able to say WUSB without people getting the wrong idea from now on. I mean, people have always gotten the wrong idea when you say WUSB, but we're quick to correct people by showing them what we're really all about. Now, let's see. I'm going to go over to Google right now, my favorite site, and I'm going to see if you type WUSB into there, are we still first? And how long is that going to last for? Okay, we're still first, and we're still second, but this new WUSB is third and closing in. Hey, we got the coolest call letters in the country now. I just hope people remember that it's a radio station and not a wireless device, although we are a wireless device, a very big one. Anyone out there on Madison Avenue, maybe you can help us think of a catchy slogan or phrase that will take advantage of this. Hey, maybe we'll even get sued by somebody for using their name. The fun never stops. Okay, now to the real world. They did it again. Bastards at CNN. Talking down to Americans. I can't take it, you know? We're not that stupid. But the whole rest of the world looks at us and thinks we're stupid because of the way the media treats us and the way our government treats us. And after a while, you just kind of get used to it and you start convincing yourself that, yes, I am stupid. I can't understand anything more than this. CNN International is the international edition of the CNN.com webpage. You can reach it by going to edition.cnn.com. I never quite understood that name. I would call it international.cnn.com, but what do I know? I'm just a dumb American. Probably means something in the rest of the world. And they have this little feature called Quick Vote, which is on the front page. You've probably seen it. They ask a question, and if you can figure out how to use your web browser, you click on something, and your vote, in theory anyway, is lodged, and you get to see how people vote. You get to see if people agree with you or agree with the other side. I don't think people have agreed with me once, but regardless, you know, I get through the days. So the question on the international edition of CNN.com was a pretty good one. Is the Iranian reform movement finished? This, of course, coming after the election over the weekend. You've heard about the election over the weekend, right? You know what's going on in the world? Pay attention. Pay attention to what's happening in the world. It's important. All right. It's not hard to do. So, the elections took place in Iran, And of course, the conservatives won because the reformists boycotted the election. And the reason they boycotted the election was because hundreds and hundreds of their candidates were kept from running by the unelected supreme rulers of the country, who are religious zealots. Kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like this country, I know. But worse. Much worse. And so, yeah, they could say it was a landslide victory for the other side because the reformists weren't really running. So the question was, is the Iranian reform movement finished? Will that kill it? Answer yes or no. I thought it was fascinating. Now, amble on over to the regular CNN.com, which also works at US.CNN.com. And the question there, who do you think Carrie should end up with on the last episode of Sex and the City? The Russian artist or Mr. Big? Now, you know, I know a lot of people, and I honestly can't think of a single person who would give anything for the answer to that question. But of course, you know, there's a fair amount of morons out there who, you know, that's the only thing that matters to them is what's on TV tonight. I'm not saying that's following things like that is a bad thing. It can be fun. But it's not the most important news item in the world. Time after time, and you can try this, compare the CNN.com website to the international CNN website, and you'll see the difference in how things are phrased and laid out. Well, sometimes we get a good question. Sometimes they ask us something intelligent. But it's just really disheartening to see this happen week after week. All right, let's take a look at what's going on in the world today. The first charges were filed against foreign detainees at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. You're aware of this, right? We're running a prison camp down there in Cuba for alleged members of Al-Qaeda. The interesting thing about it, and Taliban members too, the interesting thing about this is that they've been held for over 2 years. And this is the first time charges have been filed. Now, it seems to me, if you have a good case, it doesn't take long to file the charges. And if you don't have a good case, well, you know, it sort of doesn't make sense why you have a prison camp in the first place. But anyway, these two guys are alleged to have been key Al-Qaeda members. They've been charged with conspiracy to commit war crimes. The Pentagon named them as Ali Hamza Ahmed Suleiman Alf. Oh, this is silly. I charge them with having too many damn names. Let's try this again. Ali Hamza Ahmed Suleiman al-Balu of Yemen. Okay, of Yemen is his country. That's not part of his name. Although it might be. I don't know. And Ibrahim Ahmed Mahmoud al-Kozi of Sudan. Actually, it would be kind of cool to have six or seven names, wouldn't it? If there's anything we get out of this, maybe that could be it. Anyway, they'll be tried by a military tribunal. But the U.S. government will not seek the death penalty if they are convicted. That's according to Reuters. Now, according to their indictment sheets, the first Guantanamo suspects to be charged also have a number of aliases. I'm sure the names are even longer. They're alleged to have been bodyguards of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden, who has still not been found. Now, it's taken more than 2 years since the first detainees were brought to Guantanamo Bay to get to this stage, and the timing of the trials has yet to be decided. And also, a footnote to this story. Three human rights groups say the Pentagon has turned them down in their request to observe the military tribunal trials. And those groups are Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Human Rights First. They were told there wasn't enough room in the courtroom. Not enough space. The Pentagon officials said some reporters and the Red Cross would get seats, but their request would be kept in mind. Now, this may have something to do with it. The groups accused the U.S. of trying to control coverage of the controversial trials of some 650 terror suspects. They strive to monitor sensitive trials around the world, including trials for war crimes and crimes against humanity. They said they wanted to attend the U.S. military tribunals to provide the world with independent and informed analysis of the trials. We can't have that. Nobody knows what they're going to say. Amnesty International spokesman Alistair Hodgett said the U.S. State Department annually criticizes other countries for closing trials to international monitors. It seems like that medicine can't be taken at home despite us prescribing it abroad. He said that his organization had been able to observe trials in countries such as Libya and Egypt. Countries that have refused include North Korea, China, Cuba, and Myanmar. Or, as some might say, Burma. There's a contrast here that ought to startle people who care about open trial processes. Are you startled? Did you even hear about this? The groups say the Pentagon told them it planned to provide courtroom space only for certain journalists and the International Committee of the Red Cross. In a letter to Human Rights Watch, Air Force Brigadier General Thomas Hemingway said no charges had yet been approved and no location yet designed, or designated rather, for the trials. But he admitted seating would be limited if the tribunals are held at the U.S. Naval Station on Guantanamo Bay. Actually, I heard on BBC that they're building a courthouse on top of a hill, specifically for this purpose down there. But that's something, you know. They certainly won't have cameras in there. Just wondering how fair this whole process is going to be. And it's official. President Bush has lost his mind. Have you been seeing him the last couple of days? Well, he officially started his campaign, so I guess it sort of tracks that he would lose his mind about the same time. Or basically, he came out today strongly in favor of a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage to prevent what he calls the meaning of marriage from being changed forever. Follow me here for a second, because this thought is just forming in my mind as I speak. But if you say that you oppose same-sex marriage to protect the meaning of the word marriage, haven't you already kind of defeated that by using the phrase same-sex marriage? You know? Seems to already mean that. Call it same-sex sin or something, and say that you'll never use the word marriage in the same sentence, if you truly believe that. Anyway, his comments were swiftly condemned by Democratic Party leaders as an attempt to write discrimination into the U.S. Constitution. And, you know, that's the other thing. Forget about how ridiculous it is to even make this an issue. But to change the Constitution? What happened to state rights? What happened to less government? Now the government is going to define what marriage is. What next? We're going to define what sex is? Maybe we already have. I don't know. Anyway, Bush said in recent months some activist judges and local officials, that's what they are, activist judges, people who disagree with you. They're not judges, they're activist judges, and we all know how evil activists are. Activist judges and local officials have made an aggressive attempt to redefine marriage, and unless action is taken, we can expect more arbitrary court decisions, more litigation, more defiance of the law by local officials, all of which adds to uncertainty. All of this is going by the books. Local officials, judges, court decisions, that is how it works. If it doesn't go your way, changing the Constitution is not the answer. That's a cheat. That's never going to work either, because it's going to require two-thirds of both the House and the Senate and years of debate. And I think more people support same-sex marriage now after seeing what happened out in San Francisco over the past week. Seeing thousands of people lining up, waiting in the rain, seeing how much it matters. So, the tide is turning on that one. On a matter of such importance, the voice of the people must be heard. Activist courts have left the people with one recourse. If we're to prevent the meaning of marriage from being changed forever, our nation must enact a constitutional amendment to protect marriage in America. Okay, there's a single heterosexual married person out there who has been threatened by this, who has been affected in a bad way, who feels that their marriage is not as strong anymore because other people are getting married that you don't agree with. Please call me. I'd like to hear about this. 631-632-WUSB. I want to know how it's hurting you. I want to feel your pain. You know, in a good way, not a bad way. Continuing here, decisive and democratic action is needed because attempts to redefine marriage in a single state or city could have serious consequences throughout the country. And there you go, your state rights right out the window. The hypocrisy of the Republicans. He called on Congress to promptly pass and send to the states for ratification an amendment that would specifically define marriage as the union of a husband and wife. But Bush also said state legislatures should be left to define legal arrangements other than marriage, suggesting that such an amendment would do nothing to stop states from allowing civil unions for same-sex couples. Explain to me, what is it that that's forbidden for same-sex couples to do? They can adopt children. They can live together. They can do virtually all of the things that the normal people can do. So, what is the hang-up over this word? And also, continuing on with Bush silliness, his poll numbers are slipping. Have you seen this? Both Edwards and Kerry are ahead of him by 10 points. I consider that great. That means whoever gets nominated for the Democratic convention, the Democratic position, they have a good chance of actually winning. And while I'm not a big fan of the Democratic Party, at this stage, anything has got to be an improvement. Anyway, his poll numbers have been slipping and Democratic candidates have been hammering him. President Bush finally struck back last night, characterizing his potential opponents as negative, inconsistent, and uncertain in the face of danger when it comes to world affairs. He cast the upcoming November elections as a choice between the same old Washington mindset. It's great how he can be the President of the United States in Washington, but not be part of the Washington mindset. And a brighter future in a speech to the Republican Governors Association. So far, all we hear is a lot of old bitterness and partisan anger. Anger is not an agenda for the future of America. We are taking on big issues with strength and resolve and determination. And we stand ready to lead this nation for another 4 years. Bush called his Democratic challengers an interesting group with diverse opinions, for tax cuts and against them, for NAFTA and against NAFTA, for the Patriot Act and against the Patriot Act, in favor of liberating Iraq and opposed to it. And that's just one senator from Massachusetts, he said, which was a swipe to Senator John Kerry. I can hardly wait till the debate. And he's probably going to allow one debate. The incumbent never likes to debate. And Bush, he really doesn't like the debate. So, yeah, we're off. The horses have left the starting gate, and this is going to be a very interesting election season. Now, Ralph Nader. Yeah, Ralph Nader. He's thrown his hat into the ring, accused both parties of being for sale, rejected Democratic fears that his campaign would divide President Bush's opponents in the November election. He mocked Bush as the giant corporation in the White House masquerading as a human being. We the people, not for sale, can decide to displace the corporate controls that try to make everything for sale. I love Ralph Nader. I really do. I believe in almost everything he stands for. And I strongly supported him back in 2000. When the issue was Tweedledum or Tweedledumber. Democrats, Republicans, what's the difference? But this is 2004. It's different now. We've seen a lot of very bad things happen. We see a lot of bad things continuing to happen. We see the Patriot Act. We see the prison camps. We see new legislation and monitoring, surveillance, permanent regime of terror. I don't mean terror inflicted on the people. I mean terror among the people. Fear. Constant agitation. Color codes. Department of Homeland Security. Now, would all this have happened under Gore? Maybe. Maybe it would have. I don't know. But what I do know is it did happen under Bush. And anything short of a resounding defeat for Bush is an endorsement of all the crap he's brought upon us. And that's why I think it's not a good time for third-party candidates who could possibly draw away from the candidates that have a possibility of winning. Now, I don't think that's going to happen this time, because I don't think enough people are going to vote for Nader to make it an issue. And the odds of the same nonsense that happened in Florida happening again are pretty fantastic. I think what this is going to do is hurt the third-party campaigns, because people are going to see them as nonsensical and detracting from the real purpose, which is to have one candidate win over another. I wish the system were different. I wish we had, you know, seven or eight candidates running on Election Day that all had somewhat of a chance. And maybe in another election year we can focus on that more. This election year is different. So, Nader's kind of wasting some time here. I mean, he can be making the same points and strengthening the people that actually have a chance of getting Bush out of office. They probably could have made a deal with the Democratic Party to get a position of power of some sort in a new administration. To get green representation, perhaps. And he's not running as a green, he's running as an independent. But still, he was in a position to do that. I think more people would have heard the message then. Maybe it's not still too late. Okay, you know, every time I'm talking, someone's calling, and every time I pause, someone's not calling. So, tell you what, I'm going to read this next story. Stay on the line. We'll pick up calls afterwards. 631-632-WUSB. Country code 1 for those of you out of the country. Now, get this. The president of the nation's largest teachers union... Actually, no, he's not the issue. He's reacting to the issue. It's the education secretary of this administration. His name is Rod Paige. And yesterday, he called the National Education Association, which is the largest teachers union, he called them a terrorist organization. A terrorist organization. He was arguing that the union often acts at odds against the wishes of rank-and-file teachers regarding school standards and accountability. And, of course, he later backed away from those remarks. He used an inappropriate choice of words. You know, I think people who are in cabinet positions should know what inappropriate choices of words are. They really should. He didn't back off, though. He still strongly condemned the obstructionist scare tactics the NEA's Washington lobbyists have employed against No Child Left Behind's historic education reforms. Well, the president of the NEA, whose name is Reg Weaver, is appalled by this, obviously. To have teachers call something like that, I believe, is intolerable. And he said his apology was just as bad, if not worse. It is a sad commentary in the USA 2004 that one cannot have a different point of view than the administration without being called a terrorist. And don't think that isn't the feeling amongst many government officials, that you're either with us or against us. Even on something like education. The National Education Association. Terrorist organization. Unbelievable. All right, let's take a call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Manuel.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I hope between now and the election there's not going to be another terrorist attack, which will get us sort of like when 9/11 happened. Everyone was sort of for Giuliani and saying let him stay, and sort of if there was another attack, that would sort of sidetrack the real issues of the election.
Uh-huh.
And I think also it would disrupt the protest movement, which is going to be, I know, a lot of protests this summer against Bush and the Republican Party, and I think that would probably scare a lot of people away also.
Well, there's certainly going to be a lot of action in New York City this summer because of the Republican convention coming to New York late August, early September. Great timing, too. But I think it's a different situation than what happened with Giuliani, because Giuliani was right in the thick of it. And he showed strength, and I disagree with just about everything Giuliani ever said in his life, but he showed a lot of strength, character, and he didn't do bad things, like point to certain ethnic groups or spread hate. He was just there as a figure of strength, and I think that's why people, you know, wanted him to stay. Obviously, that was the wrong thing to do, and he, you know, in the end didn't do it.
Yeah.
In Bush's case, though, I don't think, no matter what, I don't think people will say, no, we need this guy to stay on. He's not looked at as holding the solution to any of the problems, I don't think.
Yes.
Do you agree?
I definitely agree.
Okay, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm actually, I go to school here at USB.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And you call it USB, huh?
Yeah. I actually never really thought of that whole computer thing, how that's USB as well, you know.
Yeah, well, now it's going to be WUSB, and people are going to be using that phrase a lot. And they'll find it's a hard phrase to say, too, because you have to say W-U, and sometimes people stumble on it, and they wind up saying W-S-B instead, and everybody gets confused.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, and good luck here.
Oh, Emmanuel?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yo, I just wanted to say that I love your show. I'm really glad that you're on the air to get your points across, because there's not too many outlets out here.
Well, I agree with you. There aren't too many outlets. We need to make more outlets because, you know, like CNN tries to make us seem like idiots. We're not idiots. There's a lot of intelligent people out there that have things to say, and I think they feel like nobody would appreciate them. And one thing that this radio station taught me is that there's always room for a voice, always room for different opinions, and people really have, you know, a lot of informed opinions to share, especially on a university like this. And I hope more people get involved.
Yeah. Definitely.
Are you on campus now?
Yes, actually I am. I actually hang out in the Union, and I hate, like, Nyberg. And
you might be the first phone call from on campus this show has gotten, I think, in a year of being on the air. I don't know.
Get out of here.
Yeah, well, it's hard to tell, but usually people call from different parts of the country, and
yeah,
we get local
weird
calls, too. But I don't know if anybody ever calls from on campus. It's good to see people on campus still care.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling.
All right, cool.
All right.
Right.
Good night. Of course, I was going to take another call, but it disappeared just when I did that. Story of my life. All right. Well, let's try another. Is it back? All right. I have one more set of stories I want to get into before we sign off for the night. Let's see who's here. Good evening, you're on. Hello? You got to speak up. All right. Well, try calling back on a better line. A line that isn't on Mars or something. Speaking of Mars, NASA scientists are speculating that discoveries made by a Mars rover over the weekend will help them finally unravel whether water played a role in the Red Planet's geologic history, according to a science team on Monday. I'd like to finally find out once and for all, because they've been throwing this water nonsense at us for, what is it, years now? They're poring over data and microscopic images returned to Earth by the rover Opportunity, which spent the weekend examining a multi-layered rock, nicknamed El Capitan, embedded in the side of the small crater where Opportunity landed on January 24th. There are high expectations that we will understand the extent to which the outcrop has been modified chemically and whether water was involved. One idea is that it's associated with ash fall or simply windblown material that was compacted, talking about the fine layers in the outcrop, or it's associated with sedimentation in an old lake or a shallow sea. The hope is, in the end, you have the information to show how they were formed and modified. And on the other side of the planet, Opportunity's twin, Spirit, left the trench it dug and spent days examining and rolled toward Bonneville Crater. Who gets to name all these things? Who's Bonneville? How do I get my name on one of these? There's plenty of craters to go around, you know. Anyway, that crater's about 100 meters from its landing site in Gusev Crater. I'll bet they're all astronomers. That's what I'll bet. Kind of like an inside club there. Well, come on, guys. I know you listen to the show. Emmanuel Crater, okay? How hard is that? Just write it down someplace. It'll catch. Anyway, a massive depression the size of the U.S. state of Connecticut. That's what Gusev Crater is. That's a big crater. We don't have craters here. It's one thing this planet doesn't have enough of. Might have a couple. But, no, I've never been to one. So, yeah, they're driving around there, their little rovers, finding things. I think it's incredible. I think anybody who doesn't see why this is the most important thing, one of the most important things in our future, I think you need to take a step back and realize that everything going on here on this planet is just going on this planet. There's so much more to learn and to explore. All right, let's take this call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to talk to you. You mentioned some mindless trivia, and I know a couple of months back, a year back, you were in Poland, right?
Actually, I was in Poland over the summer. It was last year.
Well, you had a question about why the yellow light comes on and then the green, right?
Yes.
If, especially in a country with a cold climate, I was over there over Christmas, and it gets real icy.
Uh-huh.
It just allows everyone to just, when the light turns green, you can shift your car into first, since most people have normal manual transmissions, and just get going.
What do you get with having the yellow light flash before the green?
Because if you can't, if you have crappy communist cars, you when the light turns green, you can't just, you know, hit the clutch and get going. You need to rev the thing up. You slowly drop the clutch. Uh-huh. Some of those cars, you know, 24 horsepower, cram four people in there, it doesn't move very fast.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, you know, I've seen this in many other countries as well. I think Canada has the same system where basically after a red light, it goes yellow. It's red and yellow at the same time, and then it turns green.
I think the ice may do it, too, if it's, I don't know. It just allows you to go right on green if it's clear.
I think I've seen it in Mexico, too. But, I think you might have something with the standard transmission. That might have a good deal to do with it. Because, you have that extra...
I'll never see it in this country because, over here, everyone would just go when it turns yellow mindlessly no matter what's in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I suppose you're right. But, I don't know. It'd still be kind of cool.
Yeah, I really like it. It involves no additional hardware whatsoever other than, you know, something to turn on that light. You know, a couple lines of code and you got it.
Yeah, I guess that's all it is. It's all a C program now anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it's surprisingly in bad shape. I saw one of the lights. I'm calling from Athens, Georgia, and I saw one of the lights being taken apart, and they're all linked over here. It was just 50 different strands of fiber going in there, about 12 boards just freelance in one of these big metal enclosures on the side of the light. It was quite a sight about how badly it's done.
I've seen that. I've seen the inside of those traffic boxes. I can't imagine why they have to have so much wiring for just a simple thing like making a light turn on and off.
Yeah, an HP 48, you know, calculator should be able to power that.
Pretty much, yeah. Or just a computer network someplace. I think, you know, they're switching to that now.
Yeah, well, this light is part of this. They wired up downtown, so theoretically it would work better, and it takes longer than it ever did before they wired it all up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the price of progress.
Yep. They tear up downtown about every year and a half to do another project. Tear up all the streets, repave them. Year and a half later, same thing. You can never get anywhere because of the construction.
And this is, what, Athens, Georgia, they do this?
Yeah.
Wow. I'll have to come down and see just how the infrastructure is crumbling.
I wanted to ask you, do you know if there's going to be another SummerCon soon? That's I saw you when they had SummerCon in Atlanta a few years back.
SummerCon, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it. But usually they send us an advertisement for the 2600 magazine.
Yeah.
So if there is one, it would have to be in this next issue, which is coming out soon, the spring issue. I haven't heard anything yet, though. I'll let you know.
Okay. I just wanted to say that was a great conference, even if it did sometimes, the hotel got a bit trashed.
They talk about SummerCon. Yeah, the old SummerCons in St. Louis, they were fun. You only had maybe about 40 or 50 people showing up. That's back when the hacker community was tiny, you know?
Yeah, the one I went to was pretty huge because Captain Crunch was there, and
mm-hmm.
there were all sorts of shenanigans with the payphones in the basement of the Days Inn. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, I think I do, actually.
For those that don't know, there were two payphones downstairs, one for all the incoming calls into the hotel and one for all the for the calls inside the hotel anywhere and one from outside to the hotel. So
uh-huh.
It's quite cool.
Wow. Wilson, thanks. Thanks for filling us in on all this, and we'll if we hear anything about SummerCon, we'll definitely say something. All right. And that's pretty much it for us. We're out of time once again. Sorry to those people we didn't get to this week, but we'll be on again next week at the same time. And, of course, Off the Hook on tomorrow as well. But I'd like to close with some thoughts on Mars. And there aren't very many songs. Actually, I started it too early. Let me restart it again because it starts with vocal. There aren't too many songs about Mars. There should be more, I think. And this one, I think, is the most appropriate. It's from that band that everybody thought was the Beatles back when it came out in 1977 or something, but turned out to be just a bunch of guys from Canada. Klaatu, named after the robot in the film The Day the Earth Stood Still. This song is called Maybe I'll Move to Mars. And one day, maybe that will be possible. See you next week.
Talked to a friend one lonely day. Told me that he was going away. He's got to live some other place. And then he turned and walked away. I can't tell you how I regret that day. I've not seen him for years, years, years. I sent a card today to my friend so far away. Have another time, wish that you were
Bromberg telling you that you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.